Support for Central Florida Public Media comes from Addition Financial, offering their Savings Plus account with a 4% annual percentage yield. Serving Central Floridians since 1937 and was recently named one of Newsweek's best regional credit unions. More at additionfi.com/NPR. Applicable on savings up to $5,000. Rate subject to change, federally insured by NCUA.
Buzz in the commercial space industry. You're listening to Are We There Yet?, the radio show exploring space exploration. Hi, I'm Brendan Byrne. It's been a busy few months for space news, from SpaceX's Starship launch to Virgin Galactic space tourism flights and ULA's upcoming Vulcan launch. We'll speak with Maria Vermazis, the host of the T-Minus Space Podcast, about these new commercial space developments. Then, many of these commercial space developments have ties to Florida. State agency Space Florida recruits and develops private space business here in the Sunshine State, and it has a new leader. We'll speak with Rob Long, the president and CEO of Space Florida, about the agency's mission and plans to grow the private space industry. That's ahead on Are We There Yet? Florida has a long history with space exploration, like launching the first U.S. astronauts into orbit and the launch pad for NASA's lunar missions Apollo and Artemis. Outside of civilian space, it has a rich history in commercial space, too. Space Florida is the state agency responsible, in part, for developing that industry, and it has a new leader. Here to talk about the agency's mission and his vision for it moving forward is Rob Long, president and CEO of Space Florida. Rob, welcome to the show.
I appreciate it. Thanks for asking me to come on and talk about Space Florida.
For sure. Well, congrats on the new role, Rob. And I first just want to start by asking you, you know, how do you define Space Florida's mission and what do you hope to do with the organization now that you are, pardon the pun, captaining the ship?
Yeah, thanks, Brendan. No, fundamentally what Space Florida is for is to create the aerospace infrastructure development and enhance opportunities across the state using our unmatched financial toolkit, the incredible experience that we have, and of course, the supporting the unbeatable location we have here in the state. So looking forward strategically, our goal is to continue to create the necessary conditions so that we can continue to build out the aerospace industry and support their long-term development here in the state.
What are some of those necessary conditions? I mean, we know that the state has had a long heritage with the space industry, but, you know, as the commercial space boom is happening in our backyard, what are those necessary conditions to continue that development here?
I like to frame it in terms of looking at the overall capacity of the network from a space perspective, and do we have the necessary infrastructure in order to support the market demand from a capacity perspective? And what I kind of see that meaning is, there's a need from a space transportation perspective at large and to move cargo and people or satellites, whatever that is, to, from, and eventually through and in space. What that market looks like and what the demand signal from the market is in the future is probably still a little bit nascent in understanding what that is, but we see it definitely on the two space side right now. And so really trying to understand what is the capabilities and capacity of the overall network in order to continue to support that space transportation to space, and then think through what the future is, and then put the pieces in place across the entire state. And that's where Space Florida really focuses, is the entire state's spaceport or space infrastructure ecosystem. And so those can be all sorts of different pieces, you know. For example, seaports are going to be a very necessary component of space transportation networks. And so going forward, is the entire ecosystem, the entire network, have the throughput and the capacity in order to do that? Some of that might mean, do we have the testing capacity? Do we have the satellite manufacturing capacity? All of those things that ultimately feed overall space commerce and the flow of space commerce through the state of Florida.
I want to talk about the port because I know that you have talked about this with state lawmakers about the needs for port capacity. Why is the port so important to the space flight industry? And what's ahead as you assess the needs of the port moving forward?
Yeah, when you look at the launch service providers that are active right now, they all, not I'll say all, but majority of them on the large vehicle side are all looking at maritime recovery in some form or fashion. And then to order to be most efficient, they want to bring back the boosters as close to the launch site as absolutely possible. We benefit here in the state of Florida from having a spaceport that is also adjacent to a seaport, which makes Port Canaveral incredibly important from that overall launch cycle perspective of launching and then recovering. And so that is why the community and all the stakeholders involved, to include our partners at NASA and the Space Force and, of course, Port Canaveral and then the industry, are all very keenly interested in it. And does the seaport side of that have the necessary capacity? And that's why we've been studying that in our wharf study, to understand what are the concepts that we could explore to increase that capacity.
So that talks about like the physical infrastructure of the needs of the region to kind of foster this growth in the commercial space industry. What about the people? Is there enough of a labor force to support this growth? And what are some plans to develop that?
You're absolutely right. One of the things, even just the first 2 months here on the job, workforce is something I have heard from industry as a key factor in their growth. And so we have definitely heard that demand signal and are working with to explore how best to grow the workforce to meet the demand. And there's several things that we're doing specifically in Space Florida. We have this concept of the Space Academy, which is an idea to help students early and get them interested in space. I venture to guess most of us that have been in the space business anytime have our stories of how we got interested in space. Mine starts at 5 years old when I got to see a space shuttle one time come through Texas. And from that point on, you know, I've been interested in space. So we really want to connect the opportunities that the space industry and the aerospace industry at large hold for students early, and then giving them some tangible things to look at. And I will focus specifically on what we're doing for what we call working with the education stakeholders on a master credentials list, which ties together technical education, secondary, post-secondary education, directly to what is needed in the space and aerospace industries. We believe anyway, there are probably many technical education credentials that exist already that can easily be used in the aerospace and space industry. So it's just a matter of, there is no question that the demand signal is there, and it's just in working together to help come up with creative ways to build out that talent pipeline.
When looking at the Space Coast this year, we could be seeing 80 launches from the Space Coast. The Lieutenant Governor has said it's very possible that'll hit triple digits in the next year. That is absolutely bonkers when you think about it. Is the Space Coast ready for it? And are there regulatory issues that are stopping that growth that need to be addressed?
Yeah, I think to answer your first question, I think the Space Coast is ready for it. I think all of our partners largely falls on the shoulders of the Space Force and NASA here, specifically on the Space Coast. And of course, from my past life, I had the opportunity to kind of work through some of those challenges, and everyone is leaning forward. And I think you're going to see some great things going forward. But I think to the bigger point, you know, we are definitely looking at policy and regulations at large, really, that help unlock growth, right? And unlock, make sure we've done the right things to unlock capacity overall, both here for what we would consider the space infrastructure terrestrially, but also to expand the space transportation infrastructure and nodes into space. And I think that's where we're going to start to look really hard at in the future, on what is the regulatory and policy framework need to be in order to ensure we can continue to build out the capacity that we need both on the ground and in space. Is the economic environment in space sustainable is a great question that we're going to have to look into and understand, you know, things like space debris, right? How does that affect the long-term ability to grow commerce in space? And so we're going to look through those things, but those are definitely things that are on the plate to consider.
And what about down-to-earth issues? Geographically, is there enough space on the Space Coast, or is there a potential to actually expand launch capabilities along Florida's coast?
physical capacity is definitely something that the Space Force, for example, and NASA are looking at very carefully, and we're right there by their side to help them as much as we can from the state's perspective. But that's why a spaceport territory is an important consideration. And as you know, we've designated various places across the state as spaceport territory and are looking to expand that designation to new areas at Tyndall and Homestead Air Reserve Base. And what that really does is, as we look at the overall space transportation or space infrastructure network, that provides some optionality and some flexibility. And so while we may not actually be launching specifically from one of those sites, perhaps there are some options that allow us to lessen the load on the critical node at Cape Canaveral. And so I think that, along with, again, kind of coming back to your policy and regulatory question earlier, how are we doing safety analysis and the things that require certain spacing? That's largely right now a Space Force and NASA question, but we want to be there to help enable that discussion and support them as much as we possibly can.
And what about space tourism, Rob? That seems to be a kind of blossoming industry, launching from places like Texas and the west coast of the country, but we haven't seen too much activity here in Florida. Is that in the realm of possibility to have more space tourism activity here in the state? And is Space Florida trying to foster and develop that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're not going to say no to any potential market on any of those things. And we do actually have some partnerships here locally with companies that are exploring space tourism. And so, yeah, absolutely. There's no reason that space tourism, and in fact, if you think about it, right, this is the only place in the country that actually has launched humans into space, right? And so that's just that natural connection that we will always have. And I think that is going to be one of those things that we will always, when we talk about space commerce, tourism becomes part of that flow of commerce. You know, it's just my mantra will and continues to be space transportation is another mode of transportation, and we must treat it like we treat every mode of transportation.
Florida is not just about launching rockets, right? I mean, what are some of the other portions of the industry that make up this Florida space economy?
Yeah, and that's one of those things that was really eye-opening to me. I was very focused on launch and the space launch component of the overall industry. But yeah, when you look across the entire state, the pipeline of projects is both diverse from the standpoint of it is entirely statewide, and diverse from the standpoint of there are very many different types of projects, and they span from traditional manufacturing to research, and then, of course, the satellite and space industry at large. That has probably been the most interesting and most telling thing. Is just the overall diversity in projects. And then, of course, the numbers that are still coming through. I think we have 20 to 25 projects, depending on where exactly they are in the pipeline, that still haven't actually decided where they will land in the state, but are very interested in coming to Florida. I think that just speaks to the overall opportunity that companies see here across the state.
Finally, Rob, you mentioned you got your interest in space when you were 5 years old. Saw a shuttle come through Texas. You've had a long career in the industry. You know, now as the head of Space Florida, what are you most excited about in this position?
Wow, the potential and the fact that we're still very early in the overall development of the space commerce and aerospace in general. The fact that Space Florida is over time has become a leader in this area in terms of thought and development. Those are the things that really get me excited about this position and this organization and the state's overall position, and just the support that we get at the state level and our local, you know, communities. It's a wonderful place to be in. And what that does, it gives you the ability and support to go out and do some very creative and innovative and forward-thinking things. And so that's where I really get excited, being able to think creatively about what the future holds for aerospace industry, for space commerce, and then really get to create what that future is and be the thought leaders in that regard.
And you get to see rockets launch, which never gets old, right?
Yeah, you know, it's a good point, actually. I say this a lot, you know, through the course of my career, I've seen dozens, if not over 100 launches, and I will tell you, it never gets old.
That was Rob Long, president and CEO of Space Florida. Still to come, Starship goes boom.
One of the cool things about SpaceX is they're very They have a very engineering forward mindset in terms of learning from failure. So a lot of people might look at Starship, you know, trying to launch and then exploding, going, well, all that didn't work. Well, they stink. I guess, why are they still trying? But what they're saying is they learned a lot from the failure, and it's a very engineering first principle. And a lot of things, we have to give them credit. A lot of things went right, and a lot of things went right more so than the last time. So things are moving in the right direction.
The boom in space news. That's ahead on Are We There Yet?
Support for Central Florida Public Media comes from Addition Financial, offering their Savings Plus account with a 4% annual percentage yield. Serving Central Floridians since 1937 and was recently named one of Newsweek's best regional credit unions. More at additionfi.com/NPR. Applicable on savings up to $5,000. Rate subject to change, federally insured by NCUA.
You're listening to Are We There Yet? I'm Brendan Byrne. It's been a busy few months for space news, from SpaceX's Starship launch to Virgin Galactic's space tourism flights and ULA's upcoming debut of its new rocket, Vulcan. Maria Varmazis is the host of the T-Minus Space podcast, and she joins us now to talk about all these developments and more. Maria, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Brendan. It's good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you again as well. And there's lots to talk about, right? It's been quite busy in the space industry. Let's start with the main event, right? Starship had another test launch, ended in an explosion, but SpaceX is still calling this a win. Let's talk broadly. Why is Starship so darn exciting to begin with?
Okay, so there's so many different levels for the space nerd on why Starship is
nerd
cool.
Away. There nerd is away, the, Maria.
I'm going to nerd a bit. So there's the visceral. It's huge. It's the biggest ever. So there is like, wow, we're sending a massive rocket, they're trying to anyway, into orbit, into space. And that is just cool. It's big. It's a spectacle. So there is that level. I know people who've gone. I'm sure you do too. And it's just amazing to hear and feel that in your chest. But the size of Starship is not just for funsies. It actually will transform how commercial space works, the same way that the Falcon 9 has really transformed commercial space, in that it's going to drive down costs significantly. So this is why people in space, not just commercial space, but even folks like NASA are very, very excited and hopeful for the success of Starship, is that it's going to make costs so cheap for sending things out into space. It's going to just open it up to a lot of groups and people who weren't able to access space before. So we're all kind of rooting for Starship to be successful, to get to orbital space, because a lot of people are really waiting for that transformation to happen.
It has to get to orbital space, though, right, Maria? And in this last test launch, it did not. What is the company saying about what it has learned? And is it optimistic about the future for Starship?
Yeah. So one of the cool things about SpaceX is they're very, they have a very engineering forward mindset in terms of learning from failure. So a lot of people might look at Starship, you know, trying to launch and then exploding, going, well, all that didn't work. Well, they stink. I guess, why are they still trying? But what they're saying is they learned a lot from the failure, and it's a very engineering first principle. And a lot of things, we have to give them credit. A lot of things went right. And a lot of things went right more so than the last time. So things are moving in the right direction. So they had a beautiful first stage burn. All the 33 engines went off beautifully. There was this beautiful separation. And then the second stage burn was mostly successful when the two stages of the rocket separated. But something went wrong. We still don't quite exactly know what went wrong yet, because SpaceX hasn't really told us. But there is going to be a full review by SpaceX, as well as the FAA, which we'll need to recertify for the next flight, of course. When the rocket exploded, that was the flight termination system that caused that explosion. It was on purpose. And we should mention, in the first launch, that did not trigger as quickly as people wanted. So good thing that this time it went off exactly when they wanted it too. So things are going in the correct direction for Starship. Are they where Elon Musk wants it to be right now? I'm sure they're not, but they're going in the right direction. So it's hopeful. I'm hopeful for the future.
That's good to hear. And you mentioned something that I think we probably should highlight, is you said all 33 engines fired at the same time. That is just an incredible feat of engineering that this vehicle was able to do that. I mean, this is a vehicle unlike anything else, right? This is an incredibly complex engineering project, is it not?
And I feel like it's we're living in this time where we can almost take that for granted about how incredible of an accomplishment that is. And last time, we should mention, in the first flight test, not all of the engines fired. And there is some thinking that the damage from the launch pad or the sound of the actual launch damaging the launch pad sort of bounced that debris up and damaged some of those rockets. So that's why they didn't all launch. That's why they didn't all fire. But this time they did. And boy, it was quite a sight, honestly. Again, you can't really discount that spectacle side of things. It is really cool to see. But yeah, it is also an engineering marvel. And it's wonderful to see this happening.
You mentioned at the start of our conversation, Maria, that this is going to change the space industry. It's also crucial to NASA's ambitions to return to the moon, Artemis, right? How does this play into NASA's plans to get humans back on the lunar surface? And does this test change timelines, outlooks, optimism moving forward?
It's a great question. Very well timed. In fact, just recently, the Government Accountability Office just said that actually we might be looking at a slightly delayed timeline for Artemis 3 landing on the moon. And Artemis 3 landing on the moon is supposed to use Starship. So it is not just, hey, we want to get stuff into orbital space. Starship is also supposed to land on the moon. But we're not there yet, clearly. So those are the ambitions. And the Government Accountability Office said it's not looking like 2025 for Artemis 3 is going to happen. It's more likely going to be 2027. To me, strikes me as much more realistic indeed. So yeah, NASA needs Starship to be successful. That is the ride to the moon for Artemis 3. So whatever one feels about Elon Musk, and there are a lot of opinions out there, if one is interested and hopeful for the United States returning to the moon and the Artemis missions, we need Starship to be a success.
And how reliant is SpaceX's internal business or its business model reliant on Starship? You said it's going to be able to have capacity to bring a lot more payloads into space. I'm assuming SpaceX is going to be using that for its business model, right? How important is this to the future of SpaceX?
Well, it's huge. I mean, right now, Falcon 9, which is their amazing workhorse, which, again, another engineering marvel that we can just really take for granted. I sound like a SpaceX fangirl, and admittedly, I am a bit of one, but it is really a cool thing, how reliable the Falcon 9 is and that it's partially reusable. It takes a lot of Starlink satellites into space. And the whole idea with Starship, when it is successful, fingers crossed, is it'll take a lot more of those Starlink satellites, potentially bigger ones, definitely newer versions of the Starlink satellites into space, in addition to transporting needs of the various space industry customers. So a lot is riding on its success. A lot of people I talk to are literally like waited on bated breath, who are going, I have something, I cannot wait to get it in Starship. I just need it to be successful and I'm ready to go.
And I am as well. It will be very exciting to see, and especially if it starts launching here in my backyard at Kennedy Space Center. Very excited to see that.
I'm a bit jealous, but also excited for you. It's going to be super
cool. Come on down, Maria.
Yeah.
Come on down.
I would love that.
So let's go from one space baron in Elon Musk to another in Richard Branson's Virgin Galactic. A lot of success is happening at Virgin Galactic. Bring us up to speed on what's been going on with that organization.
Yeah, so they've had a number of commercial space flights that started sort of over the summer. They picked up launching from New Mexico and sending a lot of space tourists to suborbital space. And I shouldn't just say it's space tourism. It's also a lot of science happening in suborbital space. And the last flight they had was Galactic 05, which sent our friend Alan Stern and Kelly Girardi into low Earth orbit in early November. And then early November, there were layoffs at Virgin Galactic. And there's a pause in suborbital flights. And people are kind of going, what's going on at Virgin Galactic after all of those successes that they had, their return to space flight? Everyone was very excited. Why the layoffs? Well, the reality is that right now they're losing money. So they're trying to sort of staunch that wound a bit and refocus their efforts on their next generation suborbital flight space plane, I should say, which is called the Delta. That is where they're focusing their efforts on now. They have designed the Delta, but they have not yet built it. So it is a lot of hopes for the company that the next generation ride to suborbital space is going to make them a lot more money, make them put them into a positive cash flow, but it's not built yet. So there's a bit of a gap there.
And in this, it may be too soon to have an answer to this, Maria, but is that kind of bleeding cash a sign of the space tourism industry as a whole or the larger economy, which has a lot of industry kind of uncertain about the future? Do we know what's the cause of this?
Yeah, it is the question, honestly. So Virgin Galactic CEO is saying basically it is access to capital is making their jobs much more difficult. There is also the actual planes going into suborbital space are they're getting worn out. They need to be fixed or retired. So they kind of need to move on to the next version of their ride to space, which is the Delta. But there's also some chatter about maybe the space tourism tickets, the cost of admission was essentially too low. It's expensive to send someone into space, so they need the new ride to space to cost more money. So if you've got higher ticket prices and also a much more increased cadence, the hope with Delta is they'll go to suborbital space weekly. So you've got a higher cadence and a higher ticket price. That will put Virgin Galactic hopefully into a positive cash flow. But yeah, access to capital is the big problem for everybody right now. So here's hoping Virgin Galactic can turn this one around. But we'll see.
And yeah, that's a little bad news for us. If ticket prices are going up, Maria, I was hoping you would say go the opposite and then you and I could be able to take advantage of this, but we probably won't, right?
Yeah, I know. It's like, I would love to go, but at the same time, it's way out of my budget. So unfortunately, it's going to be in the realm of people with deeper pockets than mine for a long time. But if the higher cadence keeps up and Virgin Galactic is able to turn this around, then maybe we will see those ticket prices drop. So maybe it's just we got to get over that hill first. Who knows?
All right. Moving on. After we've just trashed our ambitions to go into space, let's talk a bit about United Launch Alliance and its new vehicle that's coming online, Vulcan. This is quite exciting. Again, this is happening in my backyard, so I'm very excited to see a new rocket. But why is it so important to ULA?
Well, ULA has been the other workhorse of commercial space. Like, everyone talks about SpaceX, but, you know, ULA has been doing sending things into space for commercial space for quite a while. And they've been doing it at a really good price point, too. But admittedly, SpaceX is quite the competitor. And the Falcon 9 is a very reliable rocket that is launching at just an unbelievable cadence, sometimes twice a day. It's just absolutely incredible. So ULA is really trying to make sure that they're coming back into the fight with a fighter of their own that can really go toe-to-toe with the Falcon 9. So that's the hope with the Vulcan Center 5. We're hoping for maybe a Christmas Eve launch from them. And if this launch is successful, we will have a new competitor in the ring that could actually bring a real fight to the Falcon 9 and potentially start bringing those price points down overall. So in this case, it's really a matter of competition in the space industry, which I think a lot of people are rooting for. Even if they're not necessarily like, hey, I'm a ULA fanboy versus a SpaceX fanboy, they're just like, competition is what we need.
Finally, Maria, this is my attempt to steal some show ideas from you. But what are you most excited about in the coming months? And what can we expect to hear about on T-Minus?
Honestly, for me, I am not the biggest SpaceX fangirl, but I am excited about Starship. So I know right now they're working on the next version of Starship. I'm curious to see what that's going to be. It does need to be FAA certified, and that's going to take the time it takes. But I'm going to be very curious to see if they're able to launch a new version of that in the early part of 2024. Honestly, there are a lot of cool missions that are supposed to be happening from governmental agencies around the world in the next coming year. I'm looking forward to seeing those taking off. But yeah, I will also be really rooting for ULA. I don't want to sound too basic about that, but I do want to see more competition in the commercial space industry. It's a good thing for everybody, and it will make space more accessible to a lot more people. And so I really am rooting for a ULA to have a good launch on Christmas Eve. So, yeah.
Space more accessible to other people, except us.
That's a different problem, though. So,
Maria Ramassi is the host of T-Minus. Thank you so much. We will have you back on the show, certainly to talk about all of these stories and more in the coming year. Thanks, Maria.
Thank you so much. Have a great new year.
Happy New Year. Well, that's going to do it for this week's show. If you're not already, be sure to subscribe to the show's podcast feed so you never miss an episode. Subscribe on NPR One, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We've got more space coverage online. Visit WMFE.org/space. Are We There Yet? Is a production of 90.7 WMFE News. Our producer is Marion Summerall. Our intern is Alessandro Boniuto. And this is his last week. Thanks for all your help, Alessandro, and Ad Astra. Editorial guidance from this show comes from Latoya Dennis. Support for Are We There Yet? Comes from our listeners. Until next week, I'm Brendan Byrne. Thanks for listening.